You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
And you are watching Fanboy Versus. I am your host, JD, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, Chris McFeely with us this week.
This is twice in a row that we've had the full crew.
Yes, I know.
Is it only twice?
It's so far. I think so. Yep. So, Fanboy Versus, 114 episode this is. It is Fanboy Versus the Beard, as Chris McFeely is growing out a beard that we get to see week by week. It has more definition this week, for sure.
Something's going on there.
Should I start growing out mine?
Sure, we'll see which one grows faster.
Yeah, it'd probably be your mine sucks.
I'm not gonna grow a beard, but I'll judge if I need to.
Can we all all participate in No Shave November, and when November comes around,
you just made that up.
No, it's a thing, dude.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We call it Movember over here from mustache. We spell mustache with an M O U instead of an M U like you.
It's classier that way.
Once without shaving my legs, I could probably braid it. That's nasty. Oh,
nice. That would happen. But we should totally do that, though. You don't shave your legs, and we won't shave our face, and then we can compare and see, you know, which grows faster. So, how often do you have to shave your legs, Nicole, just out of curiosity?
Every day.
Every day? Really? Wow. See, this is the thing of getting married. It's like, you know, once a month or so. It's like, oh, thanks, son. No, it's not a requirement, people. Yeah. It's not a requirement.
So now you know about my shaving habits.
I don't know. Well, I don't even shave my face once a day. Like, Sunday, shaving day. This is right before the work week, and then I just kind of let it grow out slowly throughout the week and not even worry about it. Anyway, comic books happened this week. Got quite a few myself this week. I was pretty happy with my general haul. We had good stuff. We're not going to talk about all of it on the show this week. But Chris is going to tell us about some news that we did get. We didn't get a whole lot, I guess.
Just a little. Really just the fact that the solicits from Marvel for November came out. And have essentially confirmed that all of the Marvel Now books that we've heard of up until now are coming out in November. So we can expect Gillen's Iron Man and Fraction's Fantastic Four and FF and Wade's Hulk and Bendis' X-Men and Remender's Cap and Aaron's Thor. I believe that was all the new number ones. And Deadpool.
Yay.
Yeah, that's everything. But what is interesting to me is simply the fact that those are all the obvious ones. And the new X-Men Legacy as well by Cy Spurrier. That one's coming out as well. But these are all the the obvious ones. It's what's coming in December that we should have our eyes out for.
What?
We don't know what it is. I'm just saying they said there's going to be new number ones every week from October to January. And I don't know if that's inclusive of January or just up through December. But that means that it's the less obvious stuff, the less easily predictable books we'll be seeing in the December solicits, so they'll be along on their way. But there's a couple of other things from the December solicits, November solicits, that are interesting. And one of them is what's happening with Journey into Mystery.
Oh, sweet.
Yes, because it's been announced that the book, where we already know Kieran Gillen is leaving, and he's ending his 30-issue or so story that he'd always had planned to do. But it has now been confirmed that the book is going to be changing focus. It's not going to be a Loki book anymore. It's going to be about... Calm down, easy.
It's going to be about Thor's goats. It turns out it's about Thor's goats.
Oh, that would be cool.
Buy that book. It's about Sif. It's going to become about Sif.
Oh.
Huh.
Yeah.
And Catherine Immerman is going to be taking over the writing. Valerio Schitti is going to be on the art. That is probably the single best move I think that book could possibly make, and I'm all for it. because nobody is going to be able to follow what Gillen did with Loki in a hurry. You know, they couldn't just hand the, give the reins of Loki over to somebody else in the same book. They, I mean, just take moving him. I mean, it's like, oh no, little Loki, we will miss you. But it's just it would be creatively, artistically, whatever, just kind of unwise to hand it to somebody else and just expect the same level of quality from it. So, and plus, you know, the book was originally presented way back when, before it actually came out, as just being the other Asgardian book. And we were kind of, when it started, we kind of expected rotating stories about Volstagg and Sif and Baldur and Loki and all this other stuff. And it just turned out to be a Loki book. But there's loads of room to do this. And you know, it doesn't have to be about Sif constantly. They might do an arc about Sif and Aiden. Maybe something else will happen afterwards. And I'm all for it. And I like Immonen's work as well. So I'm basically really looking forward to seeing how this goes.
Yeah.
Awesome. That sounds good.
But it's also interesting is that... well, no, I suppose that actually kind of ties into the final bit of speculatory news. Okay, both of these things are the solicits kind of possibly lead towards the same thing. So the other news is not the good news. The other news from the November solicits is Avengers Academy is ending with issue number 39.
I wasn't kidding. Bye.
I saw you tweet that.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Yeah, I saw Christos Gage's tweet about that after yours and stuff. So yeah.
Yeah. Balls.
And he's on nothing now. Like, I mean.
Yeah, he's not doing anything ongoing.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, he says he's still doing some stuff for Marvel, just nothing ongoing right now. Balls, big sweaty one. Like, really, this is bad.
Yeah. Is Christos Gage doing Angel and Faith, because that's ongoing.
Yeah, it's not ongoing, but he is doing it.
Yeah, okay.
No, Angel and Faith is ongoing at Dark Horse.
It's the Dark Horse.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's ongoing, but not from Marvel. That's right.
Marvel, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so that's happening. I mean, it does look like it's going to be an end, and of course, if you're reading the book right now, this final exam storyline, well, it's there in the title, you know.
Yeah, because this is 35.
They do feel like they're moving things towards some kind of climax.
It's like there'll be two epilogue issues, I guess, after that. So, because 39, he said, is the last issue.
39 is the last one. It's a nice cover. It's just all of their arms reaching in and throwing mortar boards into the air.
Oh, that's cool.
Graduation hats, kids, if you don't know what they're really called.
Yeah. God, I'd hope we know. Yeah. Do people not know that that they're mortar boards?
Just checking.
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think some people don't know that.
So, I mean, this is not news then, this other bit, but it does cause one to speculate further, because we remember Marvel Now. We remember the Marvel Now 0.1 advert. Remember with Black Nick Fury tossing the dossiers at the audience, and there were like five images of different characters?
Mm-hmm.
That man and one was Cable, and I don't care who the other ones were, except the important one, which was that it was Little Loki, Wiccan from Young Avengers, and Miss America from Vengeance. A little while ago, we heard that some characters from Runaways would be appearing in something soon that was not going to be called Runaways. So the signs are pointing towards the existence of a book for Marvel's teen contingent. And perhaps Gillen is going there, carrying on with Loki over to that. And maybe we'll see some of the Initiative characters or the Academy characters in that. I'm gonna hold out some hope for that. Because, I mean, Gillen was doing Uncanny X-Men and Journey, and now he's just doing Iron Man, so there's, like, room on his schedule. And this is the sort of thing I'm talking about when the less obvious things in the December solicits. So we'll have to wait and see. But that's about it for the news. One good thing, one terrible awful thing.
Yeah.
Crap.
Yeah, speaking of Academy, we're not reviewing it, and you may mention it, I guess. I don't know.
Give it a note later.
As I was reading it, I didn't realize that this character was actually from Broxton. And that. I don't know anything about this version of, I mean, I guess she goes by Enchantress, but it's not the Enchantress. What is her story? Do you know?
This is these characters, along with Coat of Arms and Big Zero, these are the young masters who were introduced in the Dark Reign Young Avengers miniseries and have just sort of popped up very occasionally here and there in between then and now. She claimed to be an Asgardian and spoke with a really fake, affected Asgardian accent. and it eventually turned out that she was just some Broxton girl who was given powers by the Enchantress to be evil with.
Wow.
Very good.
Huh. Hometown villain hero thing.
I mean, it was nice to see the young masters pop up in Academy because they were... I mean, actually, like, it seems well overdue. They're very obvious, like, good choices for that because they're young heroes, young supervillains who did make the wrong choices and did go down the route of evil. Mm-hmm. And they seem like obvious foils for Academy kids, but it's taken this long to get them in now.
So, like, will the Avengers Academy characters, you think, show up in some other books? Like, maybe that Uncanny Avengers book or something like that, maybe?
Well, I wouldn't be... I would be a bit surprised if they were in Uncanny Avengers, but if there's going to be a teen book, that seems like the most logical place to look for them, you know? Depending on, you know, their status at the end of this, like whether some of them are breathing or not.
They're just gonna die because you know, that's the way they gotta end it. Just make you just sad as hell.
You know what sucks so fucking terrible is that like we get the 4-part final exam's gonna take us up to 37. You know what 38 is? 38 is the touch football game between them and the Jean Grey Academy.
Ugh.
They're letting it happen. Oh, they're doing really? It. People have been calling for that. I don't know if it's gonna be touch football. It's sports, you know. So, softball, you know, whatever schools play these days. They've announced it. I forgot it already. It's got there's a ball involved. And it's like, oh, what a lovely thing. Let's keep this series going. Oh, no, it's canceled.
That seems so, like late.
It should be a softball game is what it should be.
Like, that should have been, like, before this final exam arc or something, you know?
Should have been before AVX. Because,
exactly.
Like, AVX happened. Wolverine the X-Men got really kind of depressing. Went from being like fun and entertaining to oh god, this character wants to kill them. What's going on now?
Yeah, I mean, even in AVX, you can tell that it's like crazy stuff is just going on everywhere. So in the X books, so
presumably the togetherness of the softball game will be used to represent vicariously or as a metaphor for or a deliberate reference to the coming back together of the Avengers and X-Men.
Ah, so it'll be like a sort of
it's like when West Coast and East Coast played softball every year, except for X-Men and the Avengers.
It's like. Yeah.
And then Hawkeye's team is going to cheat because, see, that's what Hawkeye does.
It's like when the U.S. government, like, took all the Indians' land and then gave them casinos. No? Not like that? No.
I don't think so. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that's sad.
That's about it for the news, yeah.
And it's just, I love reading, especially Chris DiScaggia on Marvel, just because he just has such a depth of knowledge, and so... He's always, you know, there's always things that are popping up that connect really well. And like you said, he's probably one of the best at tying his stories into events. And since Marvel is, event dependent, you know, that's a big part of writing. So I don't know. Hopefully they'll get him on something, but he'll be on that like second lineup. You know, it's always like you have those free agents that are sitting out there like in sports. Yeah. You know, and it's like when something will go wrong or they'll need a guy and then Chris DiScaggia will come back in and everything will be cool.
Well, he's not going anywhere. Like, they said he's working on some stuff, just no ongoings.
Right, but that's what I mean. Like, something will crack in an ongoing and then he'll get an ongoing. That'll be
cool. It's like, dude, Bendis is X-Men. It's gone horribly wrong. Come in. We need you to fix this pronto.
They would never replace Bendis on a book, no matter how horribly wrong it goes.
Could you imagine? Yeah, that would be such a... Well, they canceled Moon Knight at 12 issues rather than try to keep the book floating without Bendis.
Yeah.
And they desperately tried to float Moon Knight for years before that. And it's like, oh, if Bendis can't make this work, we might as well just cancel it. It takes the failure of Bendis to get a book canceled. They don't just try to replace him. No, they just, no. We're give it up.
Oh, man.
Sam awesome. Bendis can accomplish nothing. Truly, no other writer is capable of meeting the task. Cancel it. Cancel it all.
So when is Nightcrawler coming back? No, really. Do I get to place money on that?
why do you think Bendis is going to bring Nightcrawler back?
He needs somebody that can hang around a room. He needs someone that can hang around a room or pop in at places and say funny things.
And I assume that he wants to show Nightcrawler drinking a lot, because I think that's what he wants to do.
Yeah.
You know, just drinking at the table.
Yeah. I don't know. I just feel it. I feel it strongly. Something in the
you
ether.
Believe this is the vision of Bendis.
Something in the ether is telling me that Bendis is going to bring back.
Well, time travel is somehow involved, so all they have to do is just go back and snatch Nightcrawler out of time a moment after his death. Or before,
see,
preferably before.
The X-Men are coming to the future in his storyline, so before they get to the future, they make a stop right before Nightcrawler died.
Yeah.
They pick him up, and then they take him with them. And they're like, I don't know who you are, but it looked like he was going to die, so we just grabbed you and took you with us to the future.
Might seem important. Oh, he's been he's in a regenerative capsule, and they're going to stick him in there, and then they'll go to the future and get him, and then bring him back. You know.
Hey, that was still a great mini.
They stop off in the '90s, and they find out that he has a robotic arm and a robotic eye, and then they transport him to the present, and he like knows when they're all gonna. Never mind.
They transform his corpse into a gigantic worm, and then he'll be born out of the worm.
Stop.
And then.
Turns out that underneath Magneto's helmet this whole time, it was Nightcrawler.
There'll be a new Zorn, and it'll turn out. In retrospect, the accent should always have been something of an indicator.
And yet, all of these things are possible or have happened.
I like to think that if Bendis is listening to us, he's screaming, damn it, right now.
One of those things was right, and he's like, oh, fuck, hurts! Took my idea.
I like to think Bendis is listening to us.
God. Yeah, I would love to think that secretly he listens to this show just to curse at us for how much shit that I give him. Yes, silly little me, man. Making fun of big comic book writer, you know. I am nothing. See, at least I have the sense to know that it's like I am nothing and of no importance, and I can like make fun of a big creator that's very successful and shit, and that it means nothing. See?
Let's review some comics.
Let's do that. Chris Triplett.
There for a second.
No, that was fun. Chris Triplett, then.
Yes.
Would you like to start us off?
I can.
We keep losing Nicole. Those of you that are listening to the show have no idea that Nicole keeps tripping in and out. But if you're watching, sorry.
Well, there's been a lack of filthy jokes, so that was probably an indication.
There you go. Yeah.
I thought something was different about this show.
Wait till she's not on.
Put my finger on it, but I could tell there was something different. Yeah.
Penis.
Huzzah!
I wanted to do something different this week, which I don't talk about Walking Dead much. And
no, you didn't. We swiped Spider-Man for the top of the show. You had no choice. Don't make it sound like you made some kind of creative fucking decision. Okay.
I did not get my comics this week, so I am Kindle firing my comics this week.
look at you, protect guy.
I got three books. I got Walking Dead, because damn it, after 100, I got a 101. Saga, because by God, I'm reading Saga when it comes out, whether it's digital or physical. And of course, I was going to get Amazing Spider-Man. But if you didn't pick Amazing Spider-Man for the top of the show, it probably would have been Amazing Spider-Man.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So don't make it sound like you made some creative choice and like, I'm going to do something different because I want to do Walking Dead.
Font makes a fantastic product. That's not my fault.
All right, talk about Walking Dead. Sorry.
But yeah, Walking Dead 101. Spoilers for Walking Dead 100. For God's sakes, the comic came out a month ago. But if you haven't read the damn comic yet, by God, you should have read it. Go away, read it first, because I'm just going to freaking spoil what happened in 100.
You got it.
Are you on? Have you left yet? Okay. I'm going to assume you're gone. Holy shit, Glenn is dead.
Yeah.
What did you go from there? What in the hell?
What?
Yes, Glenn is dead. Not just dead, the poor sucker was beaten to death with a ball bat.
Yeah, it was
viciously.
It was nasty.
When I reviewed 100, I felt physically ill after reading that comic. That was part of the reason, because not only was it so graphic, here's a character that's been with us for 100 issues since the very beginning of a comic. It just made me sick. I mean, if they wanted to make you hate this new guy, this new bad guy, Negan, whatever his name is, you hate him now. He killed Glenn, and dude, I want to see this guy dead. I want Rick to get him. Well, it doesn't happen in this issue. This is basically just the fallout issue of, you know, what happens now. And it's basically, they've just left him. They've got, like, Glenn's dead body in front of him. Rick's, like, destroyed. Maggie blames Rick, of course, because, you know, he couldn't do anything. They basically said, like, if you guys get up, you know, we're going to kill the rest of them. So he had to let him kill Glenn, basically like his oldest friend at this point. So many characters have died at this point. I mean, really, who's left that's been around? It's like Andrea and
Andrea's about the only one left, yeah.
I think that's it. I think, like, everybody else from the beginning is gone.
I mean, I might have said it when you talked about it originally. I don't remember, but I have been saying it, which is, like, they tell you when you watch The Walking Dead, read The Walking Dead, that nobody is safe. But inside your head, you're thinking, yeah, okay, nobody's safe. But there's a few guys that are safe, really. You know, after you read the issue, like, where Carl gets shot through the head and is still alive, you know, you're like, yeah, okay, some people are safe, okay? Nobody's fucking safe in The Walking Dead.
And when I read 100, I honestly thought, does he have the balls to kill Rick? Is he going to do it? Now, I honestly thought maybe Rick's going to die in 100. And I thought, where are they going to go with this book if Rick died? But if it's not Rick, somebody major is going to die. And I was like, it's not going to be Glenn. It's not going to be Glenn. And Glenn, then they beat the bloody death out of Glenn. Yeah, I was like,
I mean, given how, like, Glenn has managed to gain some popularity off the TV show as well.
Yeah,
it's like,
nobody's safe. It's crazy. And this issue, like I said, it's basically just, you know, them trying to figure out what to do next. Their world is gotten even more dangerous now. Like, this isn't even like the next part of a story. This is, like, I think part 5 of a story called Something. Yeah. Fear. And I mean, it makes perfect sense, because, like, this guy, his army of people, it's something new for them to be afraid of. It's like an enemy. Like, I mean, it's not the governor. He's kind of worse than the governor, because, I mean, they don't know where he's at. They don't know where he came from. He didn't really know how many people he had. He found it in the last issue. There's like 100 of them. And now he's got to figure out where to go from here. And they're just kind of stuck. And everybody is just trying to figure out what to do next. Like I said, it's mostly just kind of like picking up the pieces where you go. They eventually make their way back to the town. But, like, what's really cool is, like, the end of the issue, you find out while they were attacked on the road, their home base was attacked. And nobody at their base died. Their base actually captured one of their guys. And I'm just going to – that's basically the end of the comic. I don't think it's too big of a spoiler. But it's kind of interesting, because, like, he basically said, okay, I'm going to find you and I'm going to kill you. This is what Rick said about Negan, the guy that's the bad guy. So now he's got one of their guys. And it's like, at this point, like, Rick, you think, what in the hell is he going to do to this guy, you know, just to find him? I mean, it's like, oh, God, like, the next issue, who knows what's going to happen? But it's good. I mean, like, totally buy this book. If you're not buying Walking Dead because you're watching the TV show, I mean, it's a totally different product than the TV show, because the TV show is like, characters still feel like they're safe. The comic, like we were saying, nobody's safe. And it's awesome.
Yeah, especially this next – I mean, you know, talking about the series, I think the next season is going to be a huge test for the series as far as, you know, how far they're going to be willing to go and, you know, what they're going to do. Because I know that it gets pretty intense, does it not?
Oh, no, I mean, I've already completely lost faith.
Really? Okay, like it'll do nothing.
I'm liking it.
The prison stuff is pretty graphic and crazy, but I don't think – I mean, because they kind of wussed out, you know, they wussed out with the whole thing with Carl. I don't think they're going to do anything that they did in the comics. I mean, they really got to, you know, bring it out, or else it's just going to come off as just who cares, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they didn't even have the balls to do the worst thing from Volume 1. And it gets so much more intense than that, that I'm just, it's like, I have no faith in it.
Because the woman is supposed to, the wife is supposed to die, isn't she?
Yeah, and she couldn't, she cannot die fucking fast enough on that TV show.
You know, even though I think I read something.
I won't object to a slight deviation from the books if that bitch dies in the first episode.
Oh my god,
I've never seen a more contrary whore. Talk about destroying two best friends. Like, seriously. Die. There's a barn full of zombies. Would you go into town and give me a stick to piss you on? Fuck off, love. Fuck off. I hate her so much.
True feelings about this.
I think one thing that could be interesting, like, so Glenn's dead in the comic now. Does that mean that the character could die in the show earlier now? I mean, or do you know, so it seems like the rules are out the door anyway, because, like, Dale died, like, in very early in the show. And Dale lasted, like, 60, 70 issues or something in the comic.
I mean, he lasted till the end of the prison, I want to say, wasn't it? In the,
partway
in prison, yeah.
Yeah, it was a little past the prison, I think, where Dale survived.
I just did a search and saw a picture of dead Glenn, and I'm pretty sure Glenn is dead.
Yeah, he's dead.
I mean, like, the important thing is that he mashed his brain. You know, he beat him with the bat.
I don't think
he's
he can.
There's not even going to be zombie Glenn.
Well, yeah, the thing is, just before that, when they're trying to pick out who to make an example out of, it was kind of. Oh, it was very hard to read. I mean, not saying it was bad. It was just very emotionally, like, wow, this is very racist, very, very bad.
So. Basically, doing eeny, meeny, miny, moe. When he would pop at a character, you would feel it. You would be like, oh shit, they're gonna kill Carl. Oh shit, they're gonna kill Rick. No, he's not gonna kill Glenn. Oh, thank God, he moved on. Oh, he came back to Glenn. Oh shit, no.
Because he's a racist asshole.
Yeah.
Wow.
But yeah, it's an interesting time to be reading Walking Dead, because I mean, it's literally like you're kind of like back at the beginning, like we were saying, where nobody's safe, because we had a long time where people felt like they were safe, but now we're back to nobody is safe. I mean, honestly, anybody could die at any time. Now I could see even Rick dying at any time, despite the fact he's like the main character of the book. So it's cool.
Awesome.
I'll do that for, like, the 10th anniversary or something like that.
Like, it 200. Rick makes it to 200. He dies with Cerebus, the aardvark.
They just do it at a random issue. They just pick a random one, like, 127.
It's like, it's like 107. Yeah.
Just some random number. So. Cool. All right. Nicole, then.
All right, well, I'm going to talk about the playbook. Not joking.
I was going to say, I had a feeling that would come up. You have to explain what that is now, because that was all pre-show.
The playbook is called The Playbook, Shut Up, Score Chicks, and Be Awesome. It's basically Barney Stinson's From How I Met Your Mother. It's pickup lines on how to pick up chicks. For anyone from the beginner to the pro player, to they even have a little guide in here for the chick, for girls. It's 3 pages long. So
it doesn't even need to be that long. I mean, really.
Is it a comic book? That's what I'm interested in.
It's not. Yeah, that would be fun. There is.
She was talking about it in pre-show though, which is just funny.
Yeah, there is pictures in here. So.
I don't want to know what the pictures are. Actually, don't tell me.
It's talking about how to make a portrait of yourself. You know, have a portrait, a huge portrait of yourself in your home, because it makes you feel important. Talks about writing on you know, your phone number on dollar bills.
Oh my god.
Yeah. It's just funny. Anyways, I'm going to talk about Wonder Woman number 12. Because this issue is, if you've been reading it since the reboot, this is the issue that kind of wraps up all the stories that have been going on. So,
yes, this is the end of the first arc.
Yep. So Zola, spoiler, she's having her baby, but not in a good way. I know.
In a bad way. Okay?
Hera's not too happy with her because, of course, she's carrying Zeus's baby. So she decides to throw her off this never-ending cliff. So she's in labor.
One quick question. Where is Zeus in all of this?
He can't be bothered. It's Zeus.
No, well, I mean, it is Zeus. I don't expect Zeus to be bothered. It's just I've just realized that I have no idea if he's been in the story at all.
Well, I don't think
he has.
No,
he's not been in the story at all. Yeah, okay. He just disappeared, and then like the other characters are trying to, the other gods are trying to get his control, his power. You know, Apollo wants to be like there as gods now.
Yeah, so Apollo pretty much is the one that succeeds. You know, there he is on Zeus's throne. Of course, Hera's not happy, but Hera's just not a happy woman. Man, no. That woman needs to get some.
Wow. That's your analysis.
Her problem.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, she's throwing off, Zola's throwing off this cliff. She's in labor. Hera's basically saying, you're going to have this baby while you're falling to eternity. So enjoy your time. And of course, there's also a big fight between Wonder Woman and Artemis. And a lot of action in this.
That's the goddess Artemis, right? Not the other Amazon Artemis. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yes, goddess. So, and because they're like, who's the biggest warrior? And so they have this big chick fight, you know. But she also takes off the cuffs because they were Artemis's, and she's like, nope, I'm not going to have anything to do with you. We're going to do this one on one. And I think Apollo's really
her things. Those are Artemis's. Is that where those came from?
Yeah. She says that these were a gift from you, and so she took them off. And, but later on in the issue, she has them back on. So,
well, you know.
But okay, so a little spoiler.
Stop it! She has to have them.
Yeah, that's true. So a little spoilerish here. Apollo has taken over. He banishes Hera as a mortal on Earth. Guess what? Hera doesn't like that either. Zola has her baby, but a new bad guy emerges because of this. I really don't want to say who it is, so you guys gotta go. But it's a shocker. It was a shocker to me to know who took her baby. So, yeah.
I need just, to like, read that.
That was a little surprising to me. All right.
I was just like, no. No way! So, yeah.
I have to be honest, though, it was the last page of the issue that just knocked me over more than anything.
What did you want to talk about that last page? Where it talks about going back to the beginning. So.
Yes. Well, I mean, I'm not exactly sure exactly what we're supposed to make of it relative to the flow of time. But, well, this isn't anything to do with the rest of the story, so I think we can spoil this.
The thing you want to spoil was the baby.
No. I mean, they just talk about what the baby represents and everything, and about how, you know, it may signify the return of the old gods, or perhaps even. And then we cut to like some kind of snowy landscape or something, and a hand just bursts out of some ice, and then, boom, tube, and Orion's back.
What?
I know, right? I was like, what? I mean, Azzarello has commented on this. It's apparently, like, for now, it's just Orion. It's not like a full-on return of the new gods or anything. But
yeah,
you mean,
it definitely disarmed me, you know.
We could get...
Bardo, we already had all the evil gods in Justice League already, so the seeds are there. So I don't know, it's probably all going to head towards something bigger in the, probably not quite the near future, probably a little further away than the near future right now, but
Scott
I'm
Free.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't shown up yet. I mean, that just seemed like something they would have been kind of going with at the beginning of E52.
I mean, after Captain Marvel finally appeared in, as a backup in Justice League, like, the New Gods stood out as, like, conspicuous, perhaps, like, the most conspicuous by their absence DC characters that were left, you know, for everything that like, managed to get series, you know. JD's frozen on my video. He's doing that.
Oh, that's awesome.
He's frozen completely. He can't move now.
I know. I'm just in shock. Yeah. I'm thinking Scott Free, Big Barda,
Yeah, I mean, it's just fortuitous coincidence for me that I happen to be reading the Fourth World omnibuses at the minute, so I am knee-deep in the Fourth World right now, and I'm rewatching all the Superman animated series episodes with the Fourth World in it, because I'm watching because I got my Justice League box set, and I'm watching Justice League, and I know that comes in later as well, so I'm sort of refreshing my memory of what everything Superman did with the Fourth World, and I'm all about the Fourth World at the minute, so that one just really caught me by surprise whenever I wasn't sure if we were supposed to be seeing, like, is the baby going to grow up to be Orion or something, but I don't think that was the way it was supposed to be intended.
The baby is Zeus's baby. That's been like the whole, you know, he visited Zola, and that's why everybody's like, oh shit, you know, kill her or do something with her.
I knew that, but I was like, I was just, the way the scene completely shifted and they were talking about what the baby signified, and I was like, is what? But yeah, I calmed down afterwards.
Awesome.
Cool.
I'm excited to see where this is going to go. This last issue really. Oh, the last what McFeely was talking about was the page that got to me. I'm like, ooh, okay.
It's such a good book. I really like it. It's one of my favorite DC books.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I might have to start paying a little more attention to it now in its second year.
If that's going to be the case, yes.
They're going to be having Fourth World stuff, yeah.
Exciting. Okay. Let's see. We're going to talk about
Who are you?
I am JD.
Hi,
I'm
not, JD.
I am Spartacus.
I am not very interesting. Anyway.
I'm Spartacus.
Yes. So, Brian Azzarello makes an attempt to redeem himself with Rorschach.
Yeah. Didn't succeed that well.
You were just talking about how awesome Wonder Woman is, and now you're saying he's going to redeem himself with Rorschach. Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking in terms of before Watchmen, because I'm not enjoying his run on Comedian. Yeah. But this is probably much more like his style and much more you know, in his vein. I'm not going to go into detail as far as the story at all, other than, I mean, it's a Rorschach story, you know. There's stuff. I mean, it's, you know, the important things about Rorschach, I think, sometimes, to me, the important things about Rorschach are the, what do I want to say, the tapestry, the sort of, the elements around, like, the whole picture, the, there's a better word, the mosaic, maybe, if you will. The things around Rorschach that make Rorschach interesting. To me, those are like his speech patterns, his journal, you know, the way he conducts himself. Those are the kinds of things. For the most part, those are all here and done very well. I mean, this feels, you know, very much like, you know, the Rorschach that we're used to, in the book. You know, it's the broken, you know, very short clipped, you know, speech patterns, and yet these very detailed, lengthy descriptions within his journal. You know, and that's kind of a big element to me, you know, of an important piece to me. You know, and also ruthless and violent and also not always succeeding, I think, as well. That's another thing that does happen in this story. You know, we do get a nice sense of a start of a larger sort of story, a potential serial killer that's in this, but also how Rorschach interacts with some of the larger gangs and things.
Is it before he met Night Owl Rorschach? Is that what this is?
It's 77, I'm saying. 77. Hey, July 1st, 77. So I think...
I can't remember, to be honest.
I don't know.
I think it might be post the breakup of the Crime Busters.
It might be, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. So, no, hang on. The Keen Act was only 6 years before, so it would be 80 the Crime Busters broke up. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because now I can't remember what when the Keen Act.
There's no
passed.
Mention of any of it one way or the other in the book.
Yeah, I just know like the Night Owl book. They're kind of just become partners, and that partnership's kind of falling apart a little bit. And I didn't know if maybe
that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother thing about the Night Owl book that's pissing me off. Is that you're just going to be pissed because you didn't get to write Rorschach, so you're just going to write Rorschach in the Night Owl book?
It's like this is it's kind of symptomatic of the problem that all the books that aren't Minuteman and Silk Spectre are having, which is that they're struggling to find the stories to tell. Comedian, we've already acknowledged, can't find a story.
Yeah.
It's just doing comedian-y things. And honestly, I was not particularly impressed with Rorschach this week because from the same writer in the same world, and it's having the same problems. It's just a Rorschach story. It's not doing anything definitive. It's not telling a significant point in time in his life. It's just a Rorschach story. And we know Rorschach in and out. We know he's a completely unswerving, unchanging character. And this isn't even the story of a young Rorschach before he murders that dude. Like, this is Rorschach. I mean, that would have been interesting. But this is Rorschach after, you know, Walter Kovacs went into that house and Rorschach came out, you know? This is after
Rorschach would be really interesting, just what kind of a hero he was. Because I know what made him choose to be a hero was a very dark thing, but it didn't seem like he became that dark of a hero because, like, early days, him and Night Owl, they're like Batman and Robin or something, you know? Hey, let's go beat up some bank robbers or something, you know? And then, like, post... It's like, I'm going to murder him, with Martin and, you know, like that
Now that we don't actually know what the time frame is, maybe it is before that. I can't remember when Rorschach did that, if he did that after he broke broke up his partnership with Night Owl or not. But anyway, the point is that the Night Owl book, after a first issue that actually was able to find a bit of a story hook to show his untold origin, it has now just had to put it with hands up and say, we don't really have anything else. Here's Rorschach.
Yeah, and that pisses me off because it's kind of like, there's a Rorschach book. I wanted a Night Owl book. And even
that
if it was
really
during the time...
like it belongs in the Rorschach book.
Even if it was during the time that they teamed up, there's plenty of characters, heroes within the comic world that do team-ups that also do their own shit. So, you know, it's not impossible to tell a story about a character without the team-up. Do you think fucking Night Owl's going to show up in Rorschach's book, even if this was during the time that they team-up? Fuck no.
I mean, and this is only...
I do like that they did a team-up story, and I just want to say that because that is something that they really don't touch on that much in Watchmen. I thought that would be kind of an interesting thing, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
Well, I think they touch on it a lot in terms of where it broke, like after the Keen Act broke. I mean, they talk about how that relationship between Night Owl and Rorschach became strained, you know, after the Keen Act ended. Because for Rorschach, you know, for him, you know, as that sort of representative of moral absolutism, you know, there's no reason to stop what he's doing. You know, he's on a mission from God. You know, there's no reason to stop what he's doing.
It's an extremely generic Rorschach story. Just as the comedian one is extremely generic, but like even in the worst way, you know. And we'll have to see what Dr. Manhattan does. But
the thing that I like about this is it, and I'm not saying I fell in love with the story. The thing that I like about it is, it at best you can say it's sort of like a day in the life. I mean, it's not like the most interesting. It's not the most interesting story, but it is sort of like a day in the life of Rorschach, which is...
That's fair enough.
You know, and that's really, I think, all that it is. I mean, all that it's trying to do. The one thing that threw me off, and I haven't grabbed my Watchmen book to go back, but he's cussing a lot in his journal. And I don't recall him doing that, like, much at all.
Hard to remember exactly.
I'm going to have to go back and read the Rorschach journal because it's like, of everything that's going on, and even for as violent as Rorschach is, I don't remember him doing that. And it seems like it's wrong. It may not be, you know?
I don't remember cussing a lot in the journal. No. But I was going to ask, did the comic begin with them finding a dog carcass in an alley this morning?
No.
With a tire tread on Burst's stomach? That would have been
tire
awesome.
Tread on Burst's stomach.
Todd. There is a – he does talk about – I mean, it is mentioned, like, in the very beginning here, like, where he got – he mentions again, like, where he got his mask or something, like, where he – got his start or whatever.
Yeah, the lady's dress.
And it's like you can say is that at least it's a day in the life sort of story.
That's at best.
At best. I mean, the comedian is
awful.
Just it's nothing. There's nothing to it. It's just there. Torchwood Belfast is asking in the chat which one the best one is. I think we'd all agree it's Minuteman.
I think it's Minuteman, followed closely by Silk Spectre.
Yeah, yeah. Most defined point and the best reason to exist and the characters with the biggest scope to tell new stories.
Well, and they also have, I mean, it's a combination of having the most space to play with. You know, I think that helps a little bit.
Yeah.
So much of what we need to know about the characters, Rorschach, comedian especially, and somewhat, you know, Night Owl 2 is in the book.
Not so much Night Owl, but...
Yeah, not so much Night Owl, but Night Owl 2. So, there's just not a lot of room to play in that world. Really, all you can do is a day in the life. I mean, you can't tell a much more story.
What the heck is Dr. Manhattan going to be about?
Oh, my God, I can't.
I mean, we literally know, like, every second of all the major events out of his entire life.
And that
through the courtesy of one time splintered issue.
And that character is going to bother me if it's not written well. I mean,
yeah,
you know, there's a very particular thing about Dr. Manhattan. You can kind of joke about it, but it's like that is truly a character that exists in all points of time at once and yet is defined by living within the continuity. And if that's not really well thought out and really, you know, well crafted, then that character doesn't make sense, you know, anymore. Or it just directly contradicts everything that was set up within Watchmen. I'm scared. I don't know if Straczynski is going to pull it off in that way. But we'll see.
I think it's
going to
be just a lot of I think that's what it's going to
be. It's going to be what? I'm sorry, broke up a little bit.
A lot of Adam Hughes art. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah,
that's going to be the draw.
Yeah. So I don't know. So I don't know. Anyway, you know, check it out. I mean,
It's readable. It's Rorschach. You know, Rorschach is the one that most people, when they come into me and ask about it, they ask me, like, what they're like, and I tell them, you know, Minutemen and Silk Spectre are the best. Ozymandias and Night Owl are fine. Comedia in his trunks. And Rorschach and Dr. Manhattan haven't started yet. Rorschach is the one most people ask about, and you know,
it's everybody's favorite character from the comic.
You want
it to be awesome. I mean, that's what I was wanting you to say, and I'm a little disappointed.
It's not that it's
yeah,
like
I'm
it's,
kind of disappointed too.
It's a
you know, well, not that I'm gonna judge groups of people here, okay, but the people who are coming in to me are the kind of hipsters who don't actually like come in and buy comics from me, but oh, you know, somebody told them once or they read on the internet that some guy who's a magician or something did Watchmen, and that's totally like the comic book, and they read it before it was cool to read it or whatever. These are the type of people who like, oh, wasn't Rorschach awesome? Oh, he was the best. Talk about, oh, objectivism. Doesn't he totally subvert the paradigm with my knitted hat? And this is going to give them everything they want out of it. There's nothing there, but it's going to give anybody who's just buying it because they love Rorschach, because Watchmen is the only comic they've ever read, it's going to give them anything and everything they want out of it.
Yeah, but if you're looking
I had more moral objection to it than you because of that.
Yeah, and that I mean, and like, and that's why I said it's like it's not a deep, you know, it's not a deep, interesting dig into Rorschach's character and what he's like. It's more of that. It's more like the movie Rorschach, you know, like the movie version where it's like not as much of the background and all of the ass kicking, you know. It's like,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of, yeah.
You know. And that's why I say it's sort of like a day in the life of Rorschach, because he's not really digging into anything interesting or talking about the world or any kind of commentary per se. It's really just, yeah, I'm that guy with that funky mask that, like, beats the shit out of people.
That says weird things.
Yeah.
I was kind of hoping that he might have, like, a Rorschach bill and maybe, like, a pet dog or something.
Oh, God. You know?
That would be awesome.
So
Saturday morning, Chuck.
Oh man, God, I love that. Oh, I had to shove that into the show.
I would like to read that.
God,
the dog's name would be Spot.
It'd be a Dalmatian. You a Dalmatian? Yeah.
Let's get a Kickstarter and get that started.
Speaking real quick of
Saturday morning special.
Speaking of Kickstarter, that Gail Simone Calviente, like that Kickstarter is like
more. I would buy the shit out of that comic and or cartoon.
Yeah. Oh my God! All right, Chris McFeely, save us from Watchmen.
I don't have any one specific thing to talk about this week again, so I'm just going to hit a couple of notes. Daredevil, number 17, was out this week and distinguished itself by doing again something I think, you know, we'll probably see every once in a while with Daredevil, because this is, you know, twice is a coincidence, but three times will make a pattern. This is only the second time. But this is the second time that we've had a flashback to Matt and Foggy, an entire, like, single-issue story that is a flashback to Matt and Foggy's younger days together. And, you know, it's following on from the way Foggy has dissolved their partnership following... I don't remember if we revealed it. Did we talk about the last issue? Anyway, he found Daredevil.
I talked about it, but I didn't spoil it.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to spoil it now. While Daredevil was busy doing stuff in Latveria and Foggy was poking around his office, we didn't see what Foggy had found in the issue that he found it. We found out what it was last issue when he tipped it out on the table in front of Matt, and it was Matt's dad's skeleton and boxing gloves.
Oh, God, yeah.
Following
Isn't
on from
Matt
the earlier...
totally insane? What the hell?
Following on from the earlier issue in which the Mole Man had robbed his dad's grave along with many other people's. But Matt is like, claims he did not do this, like even in his internal narration, that he did not take these things from his dad's grave, but he can tell by touch that they are the real things. So we really, really don't know what's going on. But it prompts Matt to have a flashback to one of the times that their partnership was in trouble in their early days. And it's probably the most Silver Age the book has gotten at any point, because he fights Stiltman.
Stiltman!
Essentially, Foggy is being threatened, and Stiltman is hired to act as a distraction to keep Daredevil busy while an assassin tries to take out Foggy, because Foggy is helping out with the legal services of a man who is attempting to not find a cure for blindness, but find a way to feed images directly to the occipital lobe of the brain and grant people, blind people, the ability to see things. And once the fight is done, it ends just with a truly touching moment where Foggy finally fesses up and tells Matt what he's been doing, and he takes him to meet this scientist, and... The machine is too costly to mass produce, which is why there's a whole legal thing around it. But they let Matt use it, and Foggy arrange it. Matt doesn't know what he's going to see, but Foggy has projected into his brain the footage of his father's last fight.
It is
it's pretty fantastic. It's a really touching scene. Like, this was the fight where, you know, Jack Murdoch was washed up by that stage. You know, this was when he was throwing fights for the Fixer and everything. But this is the one fight when he finally brought Matt along to one, and he finally, you know, he gave his all for the first time in forever and won against a young man who he could never possibly have won. It was truly Matt's father at his finest. You know, and Matt finally gets a chance to see this thing that he's never seen before. It's just a really, really great scene. It's like he sees that, you know, that's my dad in the ring. Who's that with him? Matt. That's you. Really?
Wow.
Really good.
It's such a great book. I hope Mark Waid doesn't doesn't leave it when he is doing that stuff. Man, I really hope that doesn't happen.
I mean, we've got another contender for best single of the year again. With that,
yeah.
With
the yeah. Best. JD, buy that book.
Do it. I have it. I have read it.
I have the trade of the first. Speaking of stacks of trades, if you would like to see mine.
Turn camera around.
Oh yeah. So I've got mine right here. So this is my stack currently at this point, which will be vacation reading. I'm going on vacation week after this week. So that's yeah, I know.
Oh,
I know.
My God.
I know, but I'm not, you know.
It's a bad idea. That hurt.
Yeah. No.
McShane's
so,
got like the Encyclopedia Britannica.
Really
yeah.
Really you're a motivation to me because I don't want my trade stack to get that big. So
add an essential to it.
So I'm gonna read mine before it gets that big. So vacation will be the time for that. So what
yeah,
else, sir?
Well, what else I got this week? Captain Marvel number 2 is out this week. And
oh, I read that one.
Yes, the book attains direction with this week, which is good. And I also like the way that it rather plays around with expectations by meeting them directly. It's funny. It's kind of Carol basically. We heard last issue about Helen Cobb, who was the record breaking female pilot that Carol looked up to, and who we saw briefly in flashback. And in this issue, we learn about this plane that she allegedly broke an altitude record in, but because she was a woman, and the guy who. Her gender led to the record not being recorded, and Carol's determined to prove that it could be done. So she takes the plane up, and you know she goes up so high that she ices up, and she comes crashing down. And then there's a flash, and she wakes up on an island, and she's suddenly surrounded by Japanese soldiers, and then she's rescued by an all-female commando group, and you as a reader. Can really tell what's happened at this stage. She's been sent back in time to World War II somewhere. But throughout the entire thing, she's going, please tell me that I have not been sent back in time to World War II.
I like the one line, she's like, Spider-Woman was right, we need a manual for this.
Yeah, because it's like, okay,
like,
there's adventure.
That they don't. It's like, yeah, she's able to twig on to what has happened to her because it's such a commonplace thing that happened.
Well, and I like that she's like, okay, there's adventure protocols for time travel. I don't remember what they are, but I know that they exist.
She's got a butterfly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also there might be some aliens or something.
Yeah, that was like, okay. All right.
That's the long and the short of the issue. Yeah. But I think it sells itself really on the.
Well, and the big point about the record, and I think it's a good, I think it's a great character moment for Carol, is that she totally breaks the record. Like, she hits the 37,000 foot mark in the plane, and she's like, okay, cool. Well, I have to one up that now. So it's like totally Carol's like competitive. You know, nature, and it's the one-upping it that leads to all of this catastrophe. So it's like, it's a really interesting character moment where that happens. I was really glad that that was like the catalyst for all this. So I'm continuing to like it.
Yes, I mean, I wasn't totally sure off the back of the first issue, man. I think we all generally agreed that the pieces were there for the first issue, but they didn't quite come together to create the whole that was necessary to really kick the series off strongly, but there was no mission statement, you know, in the first issue. But we see that the threads of Helen Cobb in the first issue are filtering through into the second one. And again, well, we talked about Carol's characterization has never been the most consistent thing over the years, but this feels like it's, you know, if nothing else, it does feel like the writer has quite a tight handle on what she wants to do with Carol. And hopefully will help define her going forward a little and then stabilize the character a little bit. You know, there's no big change in the art. Still not the biggest fan of the art. I still would like it if it looked more like the covers.
I was going to ask about the art, see if the art's you know, doing better for you or not, because I wish it had like a maybe a, you know, like, kind of like a funnier style. Yeah. So, you know, it seems kind of dark.
Because Kelly Sue DeConnick can be quite a quirky writer, you know, when she
yeah.
is doing little fun quirks like that. And it
see, like the art, on a, did you ever read the Avenging Spider-Man issues that she was in? I can't remember. Was it Dodson that did those?
Yeah,
that
yeah,
was
the Dodson did those. Yeah,
kind of funny and fit better with the writing, I thought, than what's in the main book.
I will say though that the darker, murkier style is not badly suited to this particular issue because it is World War II, Godforsaken Island in the dead of night. You know, it as a period piece, the art fits it fairly well. It fits it far, far better than it did like a daylight fight with the Absorbing Man in front of a museum over Moon Rocks. You know, there's a much better match here. So I will say that for the art, but you know, as soon as we get out of World War II, I'm gonna be back.
And for you guys out there, there's a lot of good-looking ladies in here.
That's true. I guess.
Yeah.
He doesn't draw the sexiest ladies or anything, the artist, you know, but I'm like, it's World War II. You'd probably have a shirt that covers your belly, love.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not really common.
You know, I went off a bit as far as practicality. I went off a bit last week when we were talking about practicality and superhero uniforms and everything and how it's not necessarily the best idea, even if it... if there's like good intentions behind it, but this is just a soldier, you know. Are female soldiers allowed to have pigtails and belly shirts? I don't think it works.
It works. Yeah.
To be fair, I don't
she's
think male
soldier,
soldiers are allowed to wear. I don't think male soldiers are allowed to wear bowler hats into combat either. So it's not like the Marvel Universe.
That's
is
okay. We're okay with that.
Right. All of these things are fine.
You
we don't want to mess with
Dum
it.
Dum Dugan, man.
Yeah.
I would never knock Dum Dum Dugan. Yeah, I mean, I wasn't pulled out of the story by her attire or anything. You know, she does look like what if Harley Quinn.
Her look reminded me a lot of the new Arkham City Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
What if? It's a bit G.I. Joe-ish. It's a bit all-girl G.I. Joe. It's like Scarlet, Lady J, and Cover Girl all arrived to help.
I think that's why I liked it.
Yes. but no, generally, like it's continuing well. It's not a done in one like the first issue, you know. So there's a tighter reason for the storyline this time, and a good more reason to come back. The art's a better fit. Generally, all step in the right direction for Captain Marvel is what I would say. And Saga was also good as well, but I think that'll do it for me for the time.
Excellent.
Yeah. Saga is awesome. I liked it.
So, yeah.
Saga's
not.
We
talk about Saga every week. This is like the first time we haven't. Talked about
yeah.
Saga.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is. It continues to be good. I don't know what to say other than you need to be reading it.
That's about it, really, and then it's just awesome, you know.
Okay, well, that brings us to Amazing Spider-Man. I would love to call on Chris Triplett to do this, but I am having horrible audio problems from him. So if I could,
I suck.
No, it's not your fault. It's your ISP in North Carolina. But anyway, would you like to go through this then, Chris McFeely?
I'll do it if you want.
That would be great. I would like that.
Okay. Lizards.
Lots of lizards.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So that's our show. And
yeah. New. No Turning Back, Part 4, the last part. Human Error. Spidey has just broken into Horizon Labs, where Kurt Connors, possessed by the mind of the lizard, has transformed a large portion of the staff into Lizard Man. And it looked at the end of last issue like it was all going to kick off, but the lizards are just they're sitting there. And as Sajani helpfully explains, lizards, they don't have any reason to attack. They're not natural enemies. And I love that. That was right off to a good start.
Yeah. It was like,
there's no reason the horrible Lizard Men are going to just attack you because you're there.
Yeah.
Lizards don't attack people. That's not how it works.
Yeah, they're cool. They're all cool and all, and they just like start hanging out.
Yeah. And Lizard Bella.
Start hanging
Lizard
out. Start Dick, making start out. Start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Connors, I keep calling him Connors, but it is the lizard. You know, he injects him. So it turns out he was just thinking about staying a human after the previous issue's events, but he's just injected himself. So Spidey rushes him outside, and he transforms and. And he's the lizard again, and he's a bit he looks different. You know what? He turns into the lizard, and they fight, and Spidey beats him. That's really the full extent of the
rest of this fight sequence. There's a couple of nice moments here, like you know, they're trying to find the cure that happens. the Modell lizard. It's
he just cozies up to Hector.
And Hector's like, oh, we have to fix this.
We should draw attention to the fact that the lizard has transformed and looks different again. Seems like a rather pointless change to change the lizard again after he had just changed his appearance in Shed. And I'm not exactly sure what is so different about him, except for the fact that he's got double jointed legs now, you know, backwards knees.
Yeah.
Is he like movie lizard now? He kind of...
Well, he's not. That's the thing. He just really doesn't... I figured that's where they were going, but it's not. So he doesn't... He's still got a big elongated head. And, you know, I don't really know what the point of it was, you know, and it's just a big green lizard man in torn trousers. There's... You know, but he starts hallucinating and he starts seeing every adult as Martha, Connor's his wife, and every child as Billy. And we get the fact that the lizards don't naturally attack causes Spider-Man to realize that it's been Connor's darker impulses coming out as the lizard all these years, which I think is something Paul Jenkins played with back in Spectacular Spider-Man, but he tried to say that it had always just been Connor's inside, you know. So I think maybe that's Slott going back to that and trying to fold it in and pointing out that it is like all the reptilian impulses and everything are there, but that it's Connor's darker elements are sort of, you know, released. And the bad stuff comes from the human, the mammal brain.
Mm-hmm.
And Spidey's quite determined to possibly kill him. Well, the cure might kill him because of the transformation. But it might kill him, but Spidey's determined to do it because this is the full extent of Spidey's no one dies policy is. Yeah. Is really extending to, it's almost a sense that he's trying to correct past mistakes. I mean, he stabs the lizard in the brain with the harpoon.
Yeah,
that's so cool. So cool.
It's a nasty panel, you know. But it works, you know. Transforms it. No, it doesn't. It doesn't transform his body back. It doesn't.
No. Work.
And they cart him off to, where is it? Is it the raft?
Or, yeah.
Is it there? Yeah. But it's like he walks down a hallway past Dr. Octopus and past Alistair Smythe and past Morbius, and it's like, you know, Spidey is cold in this,
mm-hmm.
but really it's like he's got every reason to be, you know. These are men that he has repeatedly given new chance, given particularly Morbius. Like, I mean, I think there was some discussion after last issue, like the fandom was discussing whether Spidey was being like overly cold and dickish to Morbius, and it's like, yeah, but how many second chances does one bloke have? You know, I have very little time for Morbius. Oh, I can't control my hunger for plasma. It's like, fuck up. It's
like, yeah.
It's been 40 years.
Yeah.
But then we see the lizard has been sealed away in a cell and is nibbling on rats and things, but the internal narration reveals that the cure did actually work and Connors' mind has been freed again inside the lizard, and he's allowing himself to remain trapped in the lizard's body and locked up as his own punishment. And that's a pretty grim ending.
Yeah, it was like, oh man.
I thought that was going to be the ending of the comic right there, and then you have this whole other story. You're like, wait!
Nope, it's Slott. It's always going to get worse.
To be honest, like overall, this story has been fine.
Yeah,
it's not been earth-shattering. There have been some nice moments in it, but just like overall, it's been fine. It's not been as good as Shed, you know, as far as good lizard stories go. It is at least not that one lizard story again, but it sort of is, because it's like, oh God, Billy, Martha, no, cure, you know. So it is basically that.
All this stuff with Kurt Connors was different. All the
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's cured. He's okay. Let's not pay attention to him. Let's go after Morbius. Oh, while we're gone, he's turning everybody into lizard people. That's a little bit different from the typical lizard story.
Lizard tries to mutate people into other lizards is not the newest take on the...
Lizard. It was Kurt Connors with the lizardy brain thing. Yep, it was different.
It's just lizard in Kurt's body. You know, if that's the biggest distinction you can make, you know. But really, you know, it's the last couple pages of this or that. We're just going to go full on spoiler here.
Yeah.
Because
there's no way to not.
They were the best bit of the issue. So we know Tiberius Stone took the designs for the spider jammers to place around Shadowland and protect the Kingpin's operation, you know. And Spider-Woman, Madame Web, is watching in on that through the old Great Web of Life as the Hobgoblin is grumbling about how Tiberius Stone looks like he's becoming the new favorite and everything. But then the connection on the Web of Life to the Hobgoblin has gone, it goes all wobbly-wobbly, and she turns her attention to Central America, where a man called the Devil Spider is beating up drug runners in his territory. And a guy comes running up to him and tells him, "News from America's come about his brother." And the Devil Spider says, "The Hobgoblin, but it's not yet time." And you're like, "What's going on?" He never became a Hobgoblin, tells us. And you're like, "Wait, wait, wait." And if you know your history, you suddenly start to realize what's going on. Off comes the mask of the Devil Spider. Motherfucking Roderick Kingsley, the original Hobgoblin, is still alive.
I didn't see this coming at all. I was like,
no. I mean, this is the. What? It's like if I had been thinking, if I had been thinking like nearly 2 years ago, I should have seen the setup for this. But you guys will remember that I was entirely too busy drinking in the salty, salty tears of all the butthurt fanboys. I mean, I was just going, yes, angry letter, feed me. But I should have seen it, and I should have expected better from Slott as well. Because the tale, the important thing here, right, Hobgoblin History 101, here we go, quick and brief. Back in the 80s, Hobgoblin appeared, unnamed guy, his true identity was a big mystery, and it was a big mystery Roger Stern was running through the Spider titles when he was running. He was just somebody who had found a cache of Norman Osborn's old stuff and had built a new goblin identity for himself, and he was a Hobgoblin. Now, Roger Stern ran this mystery for quite a while, but wound up leaving the Spider books before he could reveal who the Hobgoblin really was. But he'd set Ned Leeds, Google photographer, up to be a likely candidate. So whenever he left and Marvel realized we better resolve this mystery, I believe it was Peter David who wrote the miniseries in which it was revealed that, I don't know if it was a miniseries, but he wrote the story in which it was revealed that Ned Leeds was the Hobgoblin. Of course, Ned Leeds was dead at the time, so they had to reveal it through flashback. And so Ned Leeds was just considered to be the Hobgoblin for like 10 years. Everybody just, that's it, as read, whatever. And then in the mid to late 90s, Roger Stern came back and did a miniseries called Hobgoblin Lives that explained who the Hobgoblin really was and who he had always intended it to be. And through minimal retconning, he was able to explain the Ned Leeds thing away and explain that, as he had always intended, the Hobgoblin was a guy named Roderick Kingsley, a fashion magnate named Roderick Kingsley. And Kingsley had appeared to be in the same place as the Hobgoblin several times during the course of the run to turn suspicion away from him. But it turned out, as had always been Stern's intention, that he had a twin brother named Daniel, and that he poses the Hobgoblin or Daniel poses Roderick to make these things happen. And then Kingsley was in one more story where he and the Green Goblin had a bit of a dust-up, because this was Osborne had just come back at that time after being gone for 20 years. He'd just come back and they had a bit of a dust-up. And he retired off down to South America, and that was it until right now, until now. He was gone. Yeah. That's like 15 years or something. So my butthurt love came from the fact that Kingsley's rep was essentially retroactive. Everybody thought it was Leeds for 10 years. Then they were told it was Kingsley. Kingsley did one thing and retired and disappeared. And so when Kingsley appeared to come back at the start of Slott's run and then died, I was like, big fucking deal. He means nothing to me anyway. Nobody ever, you know. And then everybody was like, "Oh, could you kill the original Hobgoblin?" I was like, "Yes, your tears sustain me." So I was distracted from the fact that it turns out that the guy who put the Hobgoblin costume on and appeared in that first arc of Slots was Daniel, not Roderick. And I should have suspected that, because it's so bloody obvious when you stop and think about it.
Wow. Wow.
It's crazy.
And now it turns out Roderick is still alive. And the best, the coolest thing again is this Devil Spider identity. This is just Roderick's MO again. He's got no originality. He can't create an identity of his own. He just rips off somebody else's. He's just wearing a color inverted version of the Tarantula's costume.
Yeah, what a no dumb, I thought, dude. Yeah. I felt like, wow, what happened to the Tarantula? He gets so old. What's going on?
White shoes there. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, he makes crack here about someone imposter has been running around in borrowed clothes, making a name for himself, talking about Phil posing as the Hobgoblin. And he says, good con, practically invented it. Can't let it go unanswered. I'm like, yeah. Holy shit! I'm looking forward to what happens with this.
Wow.
I mean, so... shit, like, when we got to that issue big time where he killed the Hobgoblin, he became the new Hobgoblin, we were like, oh my god, this is huge. Where is not going with this? Never in my mind did I say we're going to see the original Hobgoblin come back. And what? Where the hell is he going with this now?
Goblin on Goblin action.
700. 700, I tell you. Issue 700.
Yeah, I mean, there's...
I mean, we're going to have another Hobgoblin showdown. I mean, you know.
The November solicitations mentioned this. So if you'd read them before you read this issue, the ending would have wound up being spoiled for you by references to the Hobgoblin being back. But presumably it is going to be Hobgoblin on Hobgoblin action. And maybe that's going to lead up to issue 700. I don't know. Because, I mean, we are only now, what, 9 issues away from 700?
Yeah.
The
unless they do, like, any points in between there.
Probably not.
Yeah.
We are the triple-sized 50th anniversary issue is out next week, and it kicks off the Alpha storyline.
It's $50 in commemoration of the 50th issue.
it's $6.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, not to, like, draw away from the Lizard story and everything, which has been fine and has had some nice moments in it, but which just altogether not seem to have been the best possible conclusion to a really great story that Shed kicked off. It's just those last two pages are like, what?
Well, and I think we can agree that this was probably a little bit of fortuitous timing and tying in with the film and stuff. But yeah, totally the last two pages, because, and the important, I don't know if you mentioned, but when Modell figures out that something is missing from his office, and there's a mention that there's two people that weren't present. One of them was the guy working for Kingpin, but the other is Peter. So it immediately turns them into suspects, which means is going to be a suspect in terms of having stole the Spider-Jammer stuff. But it also means that Kingpin is going to have spider jammers. This is going to be bad.
Because remember, the Hobgoblin is working for Kingpin and is already turning against the other guys in his organization, and then Kingsley's going to come dropping down into the middle of that. Is that going to wind up... Kingpin, I believe, if I remember, knows that this is not the guy he made the deal with.
Right.
But has taken him on anyway, because he does good work. But it's really like what we get out of these last couple of pages that sets up the what's coming down the line is altogether just more exciting than the rest of the issue.
Yeah.
I think the thing that just gets me about it so much is that I should have friggin' seen it 2 years ago, but I didn't. I should have.
I was totally thinking, man, like, you know what's been missing from Amazing Spider-Man? We haven't seen Hobgoblin in a while, and then I opened this issue, and then BAM!
It's like, there you go. Just when you thought you were missing him, there he is. There he is. Well, awesome. This is a good week of comics. Pretty good week.
Next week is a very light week, though.
Yeah, and I'm worried. Well, it's another 5-week month, you know. It's just...
Yeah, it is.
So, plight
of it. Next week's only the 4th week.
I know, but it's always, you know, it's always it's always where they expand, so...
Next week is More Than Meets the Eye.
I got More Than Meets the Eye.
Dr. Manhattan. Dr. Manhattan and something else?
Maybe. I don't know. I got More Than Meets the Eye and Spidey. That's it. That's all I'm going to have. I'm going to have to talk about a graphic novel or something next week.
Huh.
Yeah. No, I can't do that. I've got to read the stack.
I'll just read an old graphic novel.
I think I have
it. Why wouldn't you read a new one? Why wouldn't you read some of your current...
That's what I mean. I'll read an old one.
One that you've got. Okay, I was going to say. Yeah, gotcha.
But I don't know if I'll even have time to do that, because I'm trying to get through the Fourth World omnibuses, and I'm on the third one. I only have the fourth one left.
Wow. Yeah, I got to decide what I'm going to read first, because I've got a bunch of stuff here. So. Gates of Gotham. I picked that up this week.
Ooh,
so yeah, so that's in there.
What,
I've only
what
read
is
it.
What is that?
That's Snyder's. That's kind of the thing that got him the gig on Batman.
Is that a detective run or is that a one shot?
No, that was a miniseries that he did along with his detective stuff. I mean, I remember the solicits for that miniseries claimed that it used some stuff from Morrison's run and that it was going to be setting up seeds for stuff that was coming in Snyder's stuff, but I don't know if any of that turned out to be true.
Yeah, there's something about that on the write-up for it, but I don't know. I'll find out. I'm going to read
the story for it. He didn't script it. But.
So, cool. I think we're pretty much like right at an hour and a half. I love this. So,
nice.
This is great. So, anyway, that's about it then, I guess, for us. Anything else real quick? Throw in? None? No.
No, I think that's about it.
Excellent. I like when it all works out. I love it when a plan
it
comes
all
together.
It all comes together.
Yes. So, we are Fanboy Versus. If you have a Android phone, find us. Find our app, Fanboy Versus app. You can listen to the show on the go, wherever you may be in the world. You can also find our website at fanboyversus.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at FanboyVS. So you should do all of those things so that you can be in the know about what's going on with Fanboy Versus and all the stuff that we're reading and interesting things and things we may retweet and stuff and follow us as well. Because then you can learn sad news from Chris McFeely, Academy is gone.
Well, do we want to give them our Twitters?
Yeah, let's run through then real quick. We'll start with Nicole.
My Twitter feed is at Beatles Diva. Beatles like the band, not the bug.
Ah, yes. Very important. Chris Triplett has the best Twitter handle ever.
Not really. It's pretty terrible, actually.
It's kind of awesome.
I love it. At Man of the Town.
That is so great. I'm really jealous of that.
Such a pimp daddy, man.
I am jealous of that. Chris McFeely?
Mine is just at Chris McFeely.
And mine is at the JD Church. I'm not
JD Church.
I always get shit for this. I swear, I get shit. Look, somebody has JD Church.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Uh-huh. So I keep checking like every month or so to see if it's available, but somebody has it and they're just sitting on it.
What you should have done instead of putting JD, you should just use JC, the JC.
The JC? Yeah, I'm sure that's not taken. As well.
I'm the JC.
I'm not pretentious. If you know me, you will know this. And in fact, I would prefer three less letters because that's three more letters that I can use in like retweets and things. So I'm like, I need those letters. Because invariably.
I should change mine to Spider-Man Fan 672 or something like that.
I just to take up an extra second, I saw Dan Slott this morning was complaining about people on message boards and things using avatars of things that he likes when they're like themselves douches or assholes because then he associates things that he likes with like douchey people and behavior. And then he like followed that up by saying, and this is coming from the guy that uses the spider signal as his avatar.
Oh, God.
Because he was saying, just use your faces or something close. And I'm going to keep using Spider-Man.
And I'll keep using the Hobgoblin.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I actually have that really cool picture the fan did of mine that I just love. I can't. I think every once in a while it's like, should I change it? No, that's pretty cool. I can't. Can't do that. So
my Twitter is Pinkie Pie and Loki. You can't get much better than that.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. So, but follow all of those as well because we do try to retweet and tweet things as well throughout the week, news and stuff. So if you just want that larger Fanboy Versus experience, there you go. So awesome. So that's it. That's all for Fanboy Versus 114. We will be back next week. So please tune in next time when it'll be Fanboy Versus.
This has been Fanboy Versus. Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.